What's going on, drillers? This is Dylan from Brain Drill, and you're listening to Toilet of Hell.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
You are listening to the Toilet of Hell radio show. I am Joe Thrashenkill. With me, as always, my esteemed co-host, 365 Days of Horror. 365, how are you doing today?
Doing okay. I am enjoying the long holiday weekend by doing pretty much nothing.
Yeah, we are we're recording the show like right when it should normally be premiering, so I feel like we're getting away with something here. It's pretty sweet. We have a hell of a guest on today. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of this band. We've got Dylan from Braindrill on the show. So we're going to talk about all kinds of tech stuff, and we're going to talk some shit on bands who don't tech as well as them. And it's a good time. And I'm just really stoked he did it, man.
Yeah, it was a fun interview. I'm just glad neither one of us stumbled over our words and said Drain Bill or like Brian Drill or something like that during the entire interview.
Yeah, I think we did pretty good. But, you know, the listeners are going to have to let us know for themselves. That it's going to be about halfway through the show. We're going to meet with him. In the meantime, we've got other matters to discuss. What's on your mind?
So over the past couple of days, a crowdfunding campaign was launched for Bruce Corbett, who's the vocalist for Warbeast and Rigor Mortis. He was diagnosed with esophageal cancer and launched a campaign on – I've never actually heard of this. It's not like a Kickstarter Indiegogo. It's called Fundraiser, and it's spelled like those old Razor cell phones, R-A-Z-R. And he's looking to raise $50,000. And as of right now, he's raised about $3,000, so it's about 6% of the goal. It's a weird feeling when we have musicians and bands we love. Obviously, bad stuff happens, you know. 9 times out of 10, they don't have health insurance and stuff like this comes up. But it's always this weird feeling of, you know, give me money. And you're not really getting anything even in return. It's just, I need help. Please help me.
I think it is about the most damning indictment of American safety net that the most common category of funds raised on GoFundMe is for medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that fucking die all across this country because they can't get the money they need for basic items. I was reading a story about a guy who was $50 short of his GoFundMe to get the insulin he needed, and he fucking died. Where are we as a society that we decide that this libertarian GoFundMe ideal is the best way to get healthcare for people?
Well, I think it's always been the I'm okay, I don't have to worry about someone else mentality that I think the country has had for a real long time, you know, not in my backyard type thinking.
It's pretty disgusting, man.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if we have any hope of like seeing this going forward and not just seeing the wholesale like ignored murder of the poorest of our society, we have to go with Medicare for all.
Well, that's the hope. We'll see if, I mean, they're trying to get rid of Medicaid. They're trying to get rid of Medicare. It really is like going to come down to, I will give you these 12 chicken eggs in exchange for some bandages.
I am a little bit hopeful because I've been hearing stories here and there about people going to town halls and basically threatening the lives of their GOP congressmen who are voting to take away the meager health care that they do get. I saw a woman try to run a congressman off the road the other day. And to that I say, fuck yeah, keep that up. I mean, these people have been denigrated and insulted for so long. It's like, how many times do you have to see your friends, your family, or your favorite, you know, musicians die because you can't get the health care you need before there's finally something snaps?
Mm-hmm. I wish I had a good answer. I mean, I love seeing the town halls and people fighting back. but at the same time, these elected officials still vote against, you know, the majority of their constituents' interests, and they get reelected. I think it's something like Congress's approval rating somewhere hovering in like the high teens or maybe low 20s.
Yeah.
But on an individual level, people's approval ratings of their own personal congressmen are very high.
Not to get this too deep into politics on this early in the show, but I think that's fully on the Democrats for not giving lower income people a reason, something to vote for. If you say like, if you vote for me, I can get you the health care you need, you're going to see a higher turnout than, you know, normal, but which is, I don't know. Obamacare, I think, had good intentions, was a really shitty solution.
And it barely passed anyway. So I think there's a lot of issues in a lot of different areas. And, you know, I wish we could just point, say, that's the problem, let's fix it. But I think it's a whole bunch of different things. But going back to the fundraising thing, Mike Nine from Mike Williams from I Hate God had issues with his liver. I forget exactly what it was, but I think his crowdfunding was successful, and I think he's on the mend now.
I mean, that's great for him. I mean no denigration there at all. That is legitimately great for him. And I'm glad that that worked out. It's just a shame that you've got to be, you know, in I Hate God to get the health care that you need.
Yeah, if anyone's interested in contributing for Bruce Corbett's medical expenses fund, you can go to a fundraiser.com, and I think if you search his name, you're able to contribute if you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, we all need the help we can get, all the help we can get.
I mean, on a personal level, my mother passed away when I was 14. She had cancer, and we had health insurance, but it wasn't enough to pay for medical expenses, and we ended up having to sell our house to help pay for that. So bad things can happen to everyone.
I'm sorry, man. And that's just the society that we live in, and it's inexcusable.
Mm-hmm.
So call your congresspeople, tell them Medicare for all, or I'll punch you in the throat.
Or even better, run against them.
Actually, yeah, please, somebody do that. I would love to run for office, but unfortunately, I decided to start a fucking website called Toilet of Hell, so I'm unelectable.
Well, see, you say that, but we're in a whole new political world right now where, you know, you can grab women's vaginas and still become the president of the United States.
What a brave new world.
I think Sepultura wrote a song about that.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This is a weird start to the show. I apologize. I haven't slept a whole lot this weekend. Been kind of busy, and I guess I'm just kind of in a mood, a little fed up with everything.
A little salty.
I'm salty, man. I'm salty, and I don't think I'm gonna get any less salty anytime soon.
Extra picante, extra salty, salt and vinegar, Joe.
That's me, man. I don't know. How have you been?
I've been all right. Busy too. I work outside of doing this. My real job is based at a university. So end of the school year, beginning of like the new academic year is always super, super busy for me. So I've been pretty much busy from about April until soon to be July. So it's pretty much work and then occasionally making fun of stupid bands and awful merchandise.
I mean, we all have our niche.
Speaking of stupid bands, how about Shining?
Shining can verify stupid band. Well, you and I, we were on Twitter a couple weeks ago, and we caught wind that Nicholas Craverth. I don't know how to pronounce his name. How do you pronounce the
Kvarforth?
Kvarforth.
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's go with that. Nicholas Kvelertak, he was acting a fool in, was it Iowa or Idaho?
Idaho.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, word got round about him basically being a drunken idiot, possibly trying to drug a woman's drink, trying to get in fights with dudes, and his show in Portland got canceled as a result. So, you know, we saw that. We were able to get it out there before the other blogs, and they all, except for Metal Injection, linked back to us. Fuck you, Metal Injection.
Well, I like the Metal Sucks posted too, and it was like, Metal Injection reports that Toilet of Hell reports.
Oh, thanks. That's super helpful. Yeah, Metal Insider. Yeah, they copied and pasted what you wrote, and then that counts as reporting it. But I digress. Yeah, so you didn't really inject all of that much commentary in it. You called Nicholas an edgelord, which, I mean, he surely is. He would probably, you know, admit to it himself. Getting edgy is, like, his thing. And as a result, all of these fucking babies got super butthurt that you dare criticize their favorite edgy black metal man.
It's almost always black metal.
Always.
First of all. And it's almost always because they do Nazi shit.
Yeah.
It's like they go together. How weird.
I don't know. Black metal, I thought, was supposed to be about being like super tough and nihilistic and anti-human and all this shit. And yet they cry so much. They cry about everything. If you dare criticize one of these bands, you're just going to get a bundle of, like, goat hammer fucksmiths coming up and saying, you're a fucking pussy.
Yeah, it's entertaining and infuriating at the same time. One of the things that really bothered me was people being dismissive about the whole situation. Like, oops, that's black metal. Oh, well. Or, oh, yep, that's Shining. And it's just, don't normalize this attitude and these thoughts and these actions. Don't just be like, oh, well, that's what it is, bye. It's not going to go away. It's only going to get worse. It's only going to embolden these edgelord shitheads who do stupid things, who do violent things, who do bad things to other people. It's not going to stop just because you shrug your shoulders and go, oh, yeah, Mayhem burnt down a church a while ago, so, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah, of course. See, somebody's never heard of Shining. I mean, that's just what they do. They drug women's drinks. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I don't get these edgelords and their pathological need to defend the illegal actions of a band that they like. I mean, if you know, like, I love Power Trip. We talked with Riley, super cool dude. If it came out that Riley was, like, into, like, I don't know, murdering bunnies, I don't think that I would get on every message board and be like, I mean, that's just metal. Murdering bunnies is metal. You're a pussy.
If you take all the things that this guy did that we reported about and you take out the name Shining and put in Five Finger Death Punch, what would the reactions be?
I mean, surely you would have every underground metal fan in the world saying, hang him.
Yep.
And then probably a lot of Five Finger Death Punch bros saying, like, what? I thought this was America.
Freedom. Freedom. I'm
gonna grab America by the pussy.
And slam a Monster Energy drink while I'm at it.
Hell yeah, bro.
Brother.
Brother! Wait, no, I don't think that Hulk Hogan... Well, Hulk Hogan's probably a Five Finger Death Punch fan.
I can't imagine he knows any music that's come out after his theme song by Rick Derringer. I mean, that was musical perfection.
Well, I mean, you're the wrestling guy. Wasn't he involved with the NWO in WCW when they were having, like, Insane Clown Posse and shit coming through?
Yeah, he was the third member of the NWO, and that kind of skyrocketed WCW. And things towards late 90s, early 2000 fell apart when they just started. I think they spent something like over 60, maybe $70 million in 1 year that the company lost because they went out and paid ICP to wrestle and brought in No Limit Soldiers for some reason.
Oh, yeah. I remember that now.
They had Megadeth play a concert that no one cared about. They had Kiss play a concert. So, yeah, let's just blame Hulk Hogan for all that.
I mean, shit, who was it? Is it Jerry Only or Doyle that was briefly involved?
Oh, all the Misfits were. They were all teamed up with Vampiro. And they were, like, sort of involved in one match. And Jerry Only actually had a wrestling match against Dr. Death Steve Williams, who, if anyone knows wrestling, was, like, a legitimate badass wrestler.
I completely forgot what we were talking about.
We're talking about the important things. Hulk Hogan, Jerry Only Wrestling, and Nazi shitheads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so just another typical episode of the Toilet of Hell podcast.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't people want to like, comment, and subscribe and give us positive ratings on iTunes?
Oh, yeah. Hey, give them a quick spiel on this. I'm going to grab my dog.
So, to really help out the show, what we need you guys to do is to go on iTunes. I know, I'm sorry, but go on iTunes. You have to have a login for that. Search for the Toilet of Hell podcast. You could also Google Toilet of Hell podcast. It'll come right up. Give us 5-star rating. Give us positive comment. And what that does is helps boost us up in the podcast hierarchy and charts. So that way more people see it. The more people see it, the more people listen. The more they listen, it really helps out the show and allows us to make the show better. So we don't just ramble on about nonsense and wrestling and all the other absurd things you like, but you kind of don't like, but you kind of do like.
Yeah. It's super annoying having to use iTunes, but hear me out on this. One of the top podcasts in the metal category, the metal talk category, is the Metal Injection podcast. So help us beat them because we deserve it.
Yeah.
And we're talking with a very, very special guest today. We have Dylan of Brain Drill. Dylan, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, man. How are you doing?
Doing great. I'm really glad to get you on the line, man. I've been listening to your band for it must be about 10 years now. So it's really cool to be able to talk with you. You've been correct me if I'm wrong here, the lone consistent member of Brain Drill since inception. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. The founding member.
And
original dude.
You've played guitar and bass in this band as well. I think that anybody who's ever had a cursory listen, just a very brief exposure to Brain Drill, knows that you play insanely complicated music. Getting to the beginning, what made you want to be the most brutal tech that you could be?
I guess it was just like a drive to just do it. Just from being inspired by like all the bands that I was listening to that were actually kind of coming out at that time, basically. You know, like bands like Decrepit Birth and Odious Mortem, who were, you know, basically like local to my area. I mean, Decrepit, they're definitely from Santa Cruz, and or for the most part, I mean, you know, the two originating guys were from Santa Cruz, and Odious kind of, they were like sort of starting, you know, they were starting to get their name a little bigger in Santa Cruz, like right when I was starting to get into death metal and stuff too. So I just kind of like, I had like that drive to just basically just like record something, you know, and just to show like friends of mine. So basically just, you know, I just wanted to have like, you know, a drummer that could keep up, and, you know, I just wanted to just show people stuff that I recorded. And so that was kind of what inspired me to start doing it.
I got to tell you, that must have been a challenge trying to find a drummer that can keep up with you. I mean, it's hard enough to find a drummer that can keep a solid 4/4 beat, in my experience. Yeah. What was that like?
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely a challenge. I mean, for starters, you know, there's not a lot of drummers in my area in general. And then, you know, on top of that, there's not a whole lot of metal drummers in my area. And then on top of that, there's not a whole lot of technical death metal drummers in my area, you know. So it was, yeah, it was definitely a challenge. We had tried out a few guys before. I had tried out a few guys because it was just me by myself at the time before I had found finally found like a really good fit. So, yeah, and that was just through the power of the internet, so.
That's rad. Yeah. So when Brain Drill first kind of came to prominence, that was definitely during the era that MySpace was how bands got found. How has it changed in your experience from those days to now, promoting your music?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, that was how we met. Or that's how I met my first drummer, was through MySpace, because a friend of mine actually showed me, because my friend of mine knew I was looking for a drummer, and so he showed me this this video of Marco playing on YouTube, and then I found out that he had a MySpace, and I contacted him through MySpace, and then he actually responded, and that's like basically how the whole band started. And yeah, I think that like MySpace was such a better medium to use than any of the social media that we have now, because back then it was, you know, yeah, this was like already 11 years ago or more, but back then it was cool because it was, you know, they had their own system that was set up for bands, you know, like they had stuff that basically was set up for music pages. So when you clicked on their MySpace page, you know, it would start to stream one of your MP3s right away. So it was just like, you know, instant exposure. People were instantly listening to your music and stuff. And, you know, now there's no real form of social media that's set up to where you can just instantly get into a band's music page without clicking to some other sublink, you know, that's like off of that page, you know, like a YouTube link that hopefully has good quality or something like that.
who was in your top eight back in the day?
Oh, wow.
I think it was Decrepit Birth, Odious, and Necrophagist, Denial, and Origin, and Spawn of Possession. I don't know. That's probably not eight, but
that's pretty close.
Those are like, yeah, those are some of the main bands.
That's radical. So this record, the one that you just put out, Boundless Obscenity, that was self-released. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
How is that experience for you compared to releasing Apocalypse Feasting and Quantum Catastrophe for it?
Well, it's definitely more of a challenge because we had no label support at all because we're not on a record label anymore. So I pretty much had to do it all myself. So, I had to go find a company to print all the CDs. And then I had to personally, handle all the orders and mail them all out myself. And, there was, the cost of shipping overseas and all that fun stuff. So it was definitely more of a challenge, but at the same time, it was pretty cool too, because I definitely got to interact with the fans a lot more. And, a lot of people were like, hey, can you sign the CD before you mail it? And so I did that. And so that was, it's kind of just a different experience. It's definitely a lot more time consuming though. So, that's kind of the convenient part with, having a label, just doing it all for you. But I mean, it is possible to do by yourself if you have the time and the right connections, you can definitely do it yourself.
Would you want to go back to another big metal label, maybe not Metal Blade, but somewhere else? Or would you kind of want to explore more of doing the self-releasing, even if it's not physical media, maybe just putting out a full album, say on Bandcamp for download?
I don't know. I think I would probably just stick to doing it myself, unless it was just a record deal that was just like too good to refuse, if you really, if you have the right resources, you can pretty much do it all yourself, especially with things like Bandcamp and YouTube and just promoting yourself. I mean, you can do it yourself. There's definitely resources out there. At the same time, it's like, if it's a major label, like a huge label, then, sometimes you can't match the amount of exposure that they're going to give you, But that's kind of where the trade-off is, though, because, it's like you either can make your money back and maybe a little bit more if you're doing it yourself, or, it's like you go to a major label and you probably won't see a dime from it. So, I guess it just depends upon how much time you want to put into promoting your own music.
Yeah, I mean, the economics of extreme metal, the margins seem pretty slim. Do you think that you did better, financially by releasing this on your own rather than going through the label route?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, I would say I did a little bit better. I still had to bust my ass, I still had to put in just tons and tons of hours of just shipping and processing all the orders and, the cost of shipping fees and all that stuff. And somebody also somebody stole a huge shipment of all of our CDs too. So somebody, it was funny. It was actually at a post office that I used to work at. I was just there at, I don't know, I guess it wasn't the best idea. I was pretty much just, because they have some post offices, they have a little kiosk where you can print out the labels yourself and then, throw them in the drop box right there. So I was there kind of late at night and I was just doing it by myself. And so I had about 100 copies of the CDs and I put them in the drop box and I took off, and I guess some tweaker out in the parking lot or something was watching me or something. And, he busted the lock that was in the, that was part of the parcel locker. And he thought that I was shipping jewelry or something. And he stole the whole crate. And he took everybody's parcel out of the locker that was in there. And then I got a call from a random Safeway employee from the West Side. And she was like, so we found like a huge bag of your CDs, like that was in the garbage can. Oh, great. Oh, that's exactly what I wanted to hear on a Monday morning. Thank you.
Fucking bastard.
He must have been so disappointed by opening it up. What the hell is all of this?
It's just like some tweaker. He's like, oh, it's worth the money.
I don't like tech death. Yeah. I like crust punk.
Yeah.
That is incredible. We've talked to a couple people about this before, about the process of like self-releasing your own material, and I gotta say, the post office, it's a fucking deal breaker. It sounds fucking terrible having to deal with that every day.
that's kind of where it became a challenge, was just figuring out the quickest and cheapest method of shipping. And you know, they are actually the quickest and cheapest. I mean, if you look online statistically, it's like they are the fastest and they are the cheapest. But you know, I mean, when you're paying over $20 in just the shipping alone to ship from here to Japan, you know, I mean, it's like double the cost of the CD. So, stuff like that is going to like set you back. But I think there's certain deals you can get if you're a distributor of some sort, which I'm not. So that was definitely probably the biggest challenge. I think that was probably why, that was one of the many reasons why it was kind of like the Boundless Obscenity album for a physical copy was kind of like a limited release. But they're still available, though. You can, if you really want one, you can still get a physical copy out of Amputated Vein Records out of Japan, because they bought a bunch of my CDs and they're shipping all over the world. So.
We'll link to that beneath the podcast then, if folks want to pick that up. What was the process like for recording that album?
It was a long one, to say the least. It was pretty difficult, actually, because I was finishing up writing the album, and then our second drummer left, so I had to find a new drummer first, and then so we started jamming. And the drummer lives in Modesto, and I live in Santa Cruz, so that's like a 3-hour distance. So for one way, so practicing was kind of difficult. But then when we started getting towards the end of recording, when we started getting towards the end of recording the album, then the singer left. And so then we had to find a new singer, and then we finally found a new singer, and then we pretty much had to put everything together like vocally last minute. And then we just made it happen in the studio. But it was a long process, you know, because there were several bumps in the road bumps in the road. So, so it was kind of it was a pretty difficult one. And then, you know, you tack on top of that, you know, working 40 hours a week and, you know, just trying to cram in basically enough time to do it all. So, the recording process, we did it. We recorded the same studio we always do, with Zach Oren at the Shark Bite Studios. And everything was recorded at his studio except for the vocals, which Travis actually recorded on his own. And then we just took the files that Travis had recorded and we just added it to the mix of the already finished instrumentals.
Very
and
cool.
And then Zach just took that and he mastered everything. And that was the, in a nutshell, that was the recording process.
So we like to talk about this with folks that we have on the show. As everybody knows, it's pretty much impossible to make a living with metal. What do you do for full-time work?
I'm a machinist.
Oh, right on.
Tech
is a way of life.
I work in metal, literally.
Is that where the name Braindrill comes from?
No, but that's kind of ironic, though, because when I started working there, it's like a lot of the stuff that I work with and use are like drills and stuff, and a lot of the tools that I'm changing out are like these giant drills, and it's just kind of ironic. It's like, whoa, it's a drill. And like, no, the name actually came back from when I was like still in high school, and I saw this National Geographic. I was like in art class, and I saw this like picture of this dude who was like all like mutated looking, and like he had this like drill in his hand, and I just like copied this picture of this like mutant looking guy holding a drill, and he's like drilling through somebody's brain, and I just wrote like brain drill on the top. And I was like, whoa, like if I ever have like a grind band or like a death metal band, like I'm definitely gonna name it Brain Drill. And then like right after high school, like it actually turned into that. So yeah, that's where the name comes from.
The name always reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the driller killer, the killer in the movie, for those that don't know, he has a giant gnarly guitar and he has a drill on the end of it. And when he plays it, he can start killing people. So I always think of that whenever I hear the name Brain Drill.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, it's like a hot pink colored, like flying V, like drill guitar.
Yeah, if people have never seen it, they could just go to YouTube, Slumber Party Massacre 2, and like the third or fourth video down is like a 3-minute weird dream sequence where it's like a music video and he's doing goofy dance moves with this guitar with a drill on the end killing people. It's highly recommended.
This sounds fucking terrible. I gotta check it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, there's another horror movie that would make me say, well, there's quite a few, but the main one that I would always think of, even before I named the band, was this movie called Bloodsucking Freaks.
Oh yeah, and, I've seen that one.
Yeah, there's like an even more brutal like brain drill scene in that movie, and it's actually pretty like messed up. But yeah, that's like one of the most like fucked up like underground like horror movies I've ever seen. But there's definitely like a brain drill scene in that movie. And then there's another one in this movie called Phantasm, I believe. And
oh, yeah.
There's like this like giant like flying machine thing that has like a drill on it, and it like drills some dude's head.
Yeah, I've still never seen any of the Phantasm movies, but I've heard such great things about them. I think that I got to make that a mission.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's definitely some quality brain drills out there.
Well, the next music video should just be all these clips from different horror movies of people getting their brains drilled.
Actually, that would be a really great idea. I mean, you know, it'd be easy to put together, cheap, and plenty brutal. Well, are there any plans to do additional support on this record? Do you think that there's a chance that you could get out and do some shows?
I mean, as much as we'd like to, I think it's unfortunately probably not going to happen just because, I mean, I have a job and, the drummer he's also, heavily involved in his music, and he's touring with a bunch of other bands too. And, the singer is the same way, not with music anymore though. He has a full-time job too. So, unfortunately it went back to kind of like what it started as, which was basically like a studio project, and that's kind of like, that's basically like was my goal with this album, was just to release another album, because so many people for the longest, for like, 6 years were begging me basically for a new album. So, I wanted to at least give them that, I wanted them to at least have some music, some new stuff to listen to. And as much as I would love to play shows and tour and all that stuff, it's just, unfortunately, it's not a reality for me anymore because, the last tour that we went on, I came home, completely broke up. I lost my job and I was like $300 in debt and, I had nowhere to even live. So it was basically, that was pretty much the deal breaker for me. That was kind of where I finally just drew the line and I was like, dude, I can't tour anymore. It's just, unfortunately, just not going to happen anymore financially. So, I mean, it would be cool, but unfortunately, it's just not not in the cards or whatever.
This damn economy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, have you considered possibly, like, recording other projects? Like, have you ever thought about doing, like, maybe a folk band or something like that that might have more mainstream possibilities?
Yeah, I was thinking of just doing, like, a banjo version of all my previous albums.
I would absolutely kickstart that, or Indiegogo, or whatever the fuck you want to do. I will do that.
Yeah, that was one funny thing. Like when I was in like a guitar center like years ago, like our drummer was like telling me to like play one of our songs on a banjo, and it actually sounded pretty funny. So,
just throwing it out there, that might be a good way to get some additional exposure. Maybe hit the folk festival circuit, really make that money.
Yeah, some bluegrass. Tech death.
Yeah, what you could also do is like the traveling troubadour thing. Just have someone follow you out to wherever the Sunset Strip, and it'll be like, you know, you'll never believe what this guy does with his guitar next, and it's just you just shredding on the sidewalk, and people giving you a couple bucks. That is viral potential.
Huge viral potential.
What are your thoughts on, I guess, the modern tech death scene? You know, I guess like bands like The Faceless, Rings of Saturn, they kind of rise up in prominence, and then they seem to be having all these sorts of different issues, whether it's losing members constantly, or people are accusing them of recording tricks inside the studio so they don't really sound like that. What do you think of bands like that?
I think The Faceless was getting huge like right around the same time we were. I think they were actually maybe even before us. I can't remember what year they came out. But, in their defense, it's very difficult to consistently keep members, you know, just, you know, because you have the combination of how technical the music is and then how demanding touring is, and then you're also dealing with, you know, I guess they have five guys in their band or maybe more, and so you're now dealing with, like, five different personalities as well. So, you know, for everybody to get along all the time would probably be a lie, you know. I mean, so, you know, fights are going to happen, arguments are going to happen, and unfortunately shit can go south really quickly. But, you know, so, yeah, consistently keeping a lineup, especially in technical death metal, from what I've seen, is pretty rare, you know. I mean, there's bands that just have revolving doors with drummers or guitar players or bass players. So, you know, that I can respect, because, you know, if you look at my band, obviously we haven't had a consistent lineup since 2006. So keeping a solid lineup is definitely difficult. I've definitely noticed a new trend these days too, which is the whole hyper processed, you know, just over processed sound of these bands where it's just, you know, blatantly just edited to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just tell just by listening to them that, you know, there's no way that they're playing this in one take or even half a take. It's, a lot of it's pieced together. It sounds almost like it was pieced together on like Guitar Pro or something. I mean, I'm not going to name any specific names because I'm not going
to. I don't think you have to. I think we all know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like I was listening to some band the other day, and, you know, because I'm trying to stay up to date with some of these newer bands that are coming out, and I'm just like, dude, like, this sounds cool for, like, the first 20 seconds, but then after that, it's like, okay, number one, it's like a hardcore breakdown, which, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of, and then number two, it's like the notes that he's playing, they don't even sound like real notes. Like, they sound like it was literally written, like, it was literally, like, punched in on a computer, and then the computer just, like, recorded, like, an emulated guitar track of all the notes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah,
but, like,
yeah, no, it's yeah. Like, the Guitar Pro MIDI sound is kind of, like, what I get out of a lot of this.
Yeah, and at first I was like, like, I wonder if, like, they were just going for that particular sound because they wanted to sound robotic, or I wonder if that's really what thought sounded like an actual guitar, you know. So, like, I think that's kind of a bummer because, you know, it's getting rid of the whole, like, organic sound. It's getting rid of, like, it's not even really sounding like musicianship anymore. It's just sounding like some nerd on a computer just pushing buttons, you know, which, you know, I mean, that's cool. That's cool if that's the sound you want to hear, by all means. But to me, it's like, it sounds much more soulful when you're organically playing it and you're doing it over and over again, physically on your guitar till you nail it, you know, not just, you know, punching in these single notes by themselves on a fucking computer. It's like, dude, why are you even playing guitar at that point, you know?
So, speaking of the writing process, how does it work for you? Is it more natural just to put all of these notes in, or do you kind of put a conscious effort into like grabbing a pen and paper and kind of writing things out? And okay, this part should go here, this tempo change should go here.
Oh yeah, so like for my writing process, like I don't use computers at all whatsoever. Like I'm not gonna like sit there on Guitar Pro and like punch in like numbers of notes and then replay it and then be like, oh, hopefully this sounds cool. You know, I like the way that I am doing it is like, I would basically, you know, I would have like a sound in my head or like a riff in my head. And, I would just take this, I had this little like ghetto, off like 11 track, you know, digital recorder. And I would just like, you know, I would start with the first riff that I would think sounded the best for like an intro of the song, and I would record that first riff, and then I would basically just build on top of that riff, you know. So it was like, okay, yeah. So in a way, I mean, I didn't use a pen and paper, but I kind of just did it with my ears and my brain, and I just, you know, would map it out in my head, and then I would just record it on the little 11 track MIDI, or not MIDI, the little 11 track Boss digital recorder, and then, you know, I would kind of just map out the song. And then when I figured like I had a structure of everything I wanted from start to end, then I would just go back and re-record the whole song all the way through just in one take, just so, you know, I had like a scratch track of the song that I wrote.
The band has an interesting history with Cannibal Corpse. For some of the listeners that don't know, Cannibal Corpse's bassist Alex Webster had recommended Brain Drill to Metal Blade, and former Brain Drill members Marco and Jeff joined 6 Feet Under, who, you know, as we know, is Cannibal Corpse's former vocalist, Chris Barnes. My question is, when does Brain Drill start to get some Cannibal Corpse members in the band?
I don't know. I don't think they ever are going to need to join our band. I don't know. Like, I was actually, there's a part in one of our songs in the Aberrant Mutation that has like a little bass solo that I ended up doing myself. I was actually really hoping for like a guest appearance from Alex Webster, their bass player. I was hoping that he would be able to do like a little guest bass solo for that part. But unfortunately, you know, he's a busy guy and everything, so it kind of didn't really work out. But yeah, that was the one thing that I was definitely asking like a member of, or I was going to definitely consider like a member of Cannibal Corpse, seeing if they want to do it. And I think he said he was definitely honored that I asked, but he was just, I think he was like on tour or something like while we're, you know, trying to prepare for that album. So yeah, he just couldn't do it, but yeah, it would have been cool, I guess, to have like Pat O'Brien or somebody do like a guest solo on it. That would have been cool, but no, I unfortunately it kind of didn't work out that way. But
maybe for the next album.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's cool. A little early to say anything, but like, do you have any plans musically for what you would like to do next?
Not at the moment, actually. I'm just sort of just kind of reflecting on the whole thing and thinking about what I want to write next. So, you know, yeah, it definitely took me a while to obviously write this third album, but I think it was also, yeah, it had to do just with like, you know, stuff going on in my personal life. And then just listening to the previous two albums too, just, you know, seeing, you know, what I wanted to improve on and, you know, what I can make sound better. So, yeah, I don't know. It's probably going to be a while. I have a lot of stuff I have to think about. So yeah, unfortunately I haven't started writing just yet, but, yeah, I'm thinking about it.
Thanks so much for doing this, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you for having me.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.